Thanks for tuning into the China Flexpat podcast. My name is Verena, and today I'm talking with Felix, a German guy with his own beer brand in China. Yes, I know. Last time I talked with someone in the coffee industry, but it's not necessarily about coffee or beer. Listen to what Felix has to explain about localization and crucial skills for every Flexpat to be successful. Keep listening to his advice and also let us know your challenges so the Flexpat community can help you out as well.
Hi, my name is Felix Wendland. I'm co-founder and general manager of Brande Urstoff in China. Brande Urstoff is a traditional German beer brand that dates back to the year 1688. The brand we acquired in 2014, so around 10 years ago. And now we are only focused on the Chinese market. That means that this product, Brande Urstoff, is neither promoted nor in any way buyable, like you cannot buy it in Germany. We produce our beers locally in China. I think this is one of the biggest differences to all the other German beers that you can find in China usually. And we import all our ingredients mainly from Europe, mainly also from Germany, especially the hops and the malt. And we brew our products in accordance to the German purity law. So much to the product itself. We started in 2016. It's a German beer brand. So we also consider ourselves as a German beer brand when we arrived in China. And our mission in China is to refresh the old-fashioned image of German beer in China, because we still have the feeling that there are a lot of German beer brands active in the Chinese market which have a very old perception of German beers, and we try to make it a little bit more fresh and more appealing to younger people. My personal first touch point with China was in previous projects and previous companies. So I did several business trips to China, and I was really interested in how the people are doing business here, because it's so different to the way we used to do business in Germany. And that was also the main reason why I decided in 2012 to spend my entire holidays in China and traveled around as a tourist and dig a little bit deeper into the country and try to learn a little bit about the culture itself. To actually live in China, that was rather unplanned for me. The original idea of mine and my business partner was that we say we start the company in China and then we travel back and forth. So let's say 2 weeks we are going to remotely manage the team from Germany, and the rest of the time we would then go to China to be really on site. But we quite early realized that this is probably a quite wrong approach to do business in China. You really have to be on the ground. You have to be close to your clients and also close to your team to really make a change.
Thank you, Felix. And welcome to the China Flexpat podcast. I already learned a lot about you from the introduction. So I understand you're also from Germany, representing your own beer brand here in China. And also you had quite a few touch points, one through holiday, through business trips, and then finally deciding to start up your business here. When we go a little bit more detailed into how you established your business here, you might have had some challenges. So maybe let's talk first about the challenges and what kept you actually motivated to really go on with your business here in China.
So we started our business in 2016 in Shanghai. It's a wholly owned foreign enterprise. I think most of the startups would choose this setup. And like the first challenges arrived at the very beginning, like how to set up the company. Do we do it with an international agency? Do we do it with a local agent who's probably a little bit more familiar with the entire authority setup and also how to set up companies? And this was the first challenge, and we decided then, okay, we want to become a Chinese company. So we go with the local agent, which had a lot of language barriers for sure at the beginning. But I think at the end of the day, it was a good decision to do so. This guy is still helping us to manage our authority and government affairs nowadays. So a challenge that we easily were able to overcome. And then the biggest challenge was actually directly related to our distribution, because we thought that China is the biggest e-commerce market in the world, also would have the same, this would also apply for the F&B industry. But we had to learn that the e-commerce channel, like those big platforms like Tmall and Jingdong, are probably not the best channels for our products, especially as we don't have the budget for huge marketing spendings. So our focus to say we only go for online only at the beginning was quite wrong. And that led then directly to other challenges, like how do we find then actually our client base? Like, do we approach wholesalers, distributors? Do we work with bars and restaurants at the beginning? And this is only strategic point of views that we had to somehow overcome. But on the other hand side, we also needed to find the right employees in the Chinese market. And I think this is one of the biggest challenges that we still have. How do you find professional people that fit into your existing team and that really help you to build the company all over China?
Yeah, thank you. These are really very interesting insights. I mean, as you mentioned, setup is difficult, language barrier also. I'll check on that a little bit later on. The distribution, really, really a very interesting point, because also myself, I would have thought starting online, not only because of budget reasons, but online, we think, especially with COVID, is the new thing where people really go for shopping or go to learn about new things. So this obviously has not yet fully covered every industry. And employees, for sure, is a problem in every industry. Find the right people that really also fit to your company values, that also fit to the company style, the company culture. So if we look further, not so much on the company itself, but on how you were handling it, you as a flexpat. So which kind of things or which kind of challenges you think have been easier for you because you are a flexpat, and which have been harder?
I think easier was for sure that since we are selling German beer and I'm German, it's an easy story to tell to clients. Like, you are German, you know about the German market, you know about German beer. So you just have the reputation naturally. So you don't have to convince someone that you know German beers because you're just German. This was for sure something where I benefited a lot from. On the other hand side, what I realized very early was that the moment you talk to those local wholesalers and distributors, it's not always beneficial to be a foreigner. You have to know those companies are very local companies, mainly family businesses. They don't have too many international touch points. So why shall they be used to do business with a foreigner? And this is something we had to learn quite early, that it makes more sense to hire local sales managers and even a sales director who's Chinese to really also overcome these kind of problems, that maybe the foreigner like me or also my business partner, that the management has to jump in from time to time in bigger business meetings. But when it comes to the negotiation, it's always, in our point of view, easier for our local clients to talk to a Chinese national rather than to a foreigner. So this was one of the biggest challenges we had to overcome at the beginning, because since we are not Chinese, we had to hire someone, and we had to hire someone that we 100% trust and that is also loyal to our brand.
So that means you, as a German flexpat, you are handling a complete Chinese workforce. Is it correct?
That's correct. Like, only me, my business partner, and our brewmaster, we are German, and the rest of the team is Chinese. And this is also one of our main rules in the recruitment process. We want to hire only Chinese nationals.
So on the one hand, of course, it maybe helps you to solve a few problems, like the communication to your distributors. But on the other hand, of course, probably you have not come like fully studied Chinese, fluent in Chinese. You already mentioned the language barriers due to the setup. So how is it with the language barriers now? How is your Chinese meanwhile, for example? How important do you think is it to speak Chinese as a flexpat? And how you deal that, and especially towards your employees?
When I arrived in 2016 in China, I didn't speak any Chinese, like only the basic words that you just like caught during the first business trips. But then I would also say in 2016, I really didn't pay too much attention to the Chinese. But when I would say mid of 2017, when I realized, okay, you really need to speak the language to first also understand your team much better and the clients, and that you can also to a certain degree can follow the business talks that your colleagues have with the clients, you just need Chinese. So I would say nowadays my Chinese is quite okay for basic business talks. However, for negotiations, especially outside Shanghai, maybe in areas where the dialect in Chinese is also a huge challenge for someone who speaks good Mandarin, but maybe you just don't understand your business partner or your client because he speaks a very strong dialect. So I always take our sales director or local sales manager with me to overcome this language barrier still. But in general, I would say, and I would highly recommend for everyone who is wants to be a flexpat in China, to at least never give up on learning the language. Like, I would never recommend someone to come to China and think you can manage everything in English. If you really have a plan to stay here for a certain period of time, you should invest the time, do Chinese classes. I still do it 2 to 3 times a week, just to also show somehow respect to your clients that you at least try a little bit to understand their culture and speak their language.
This important points you mentioned, one side, the respect towards your clients, also towards your employees, that you really feel interested in their language, in their culture. And on top of that, I think as soon as you learn more about the Chinese language, you understand also much better Chinese thinking, because everyone, of course, thinks in their own language. And for me, for example, also then I understand Chinese speaking English much better, because usually also they translate directly from Chinese into English. So it has many, many advantages. But of course, language doesn't solve everything. You have to build up trust to your people, because at the end, they represent your brand, they represent your company, and you go a lot of risk with every of those people. So at the end, how did you really build up your local team? And how do you keep them loyal to you, to your company, and to your brand?
This is very strongly related to the recruitment process. Our first employee, who is luckily still with us, so that shows that we have a few colleagues that are very loyal to our brand, we found via a friend of ours. Like, he recommended her and said that she might be the right person for our office management, and she's also my assistant, so to say. At the beginning was a lot of recommendations. Who could help our brand, who could help us to maneuver through the first month in China. And then later on, especially for the sales team, we started to work with headhunters. And we also rely a lot on the professional and personal network of our sales director. Like, he recommends people that he probably has worked previously with. And then we check whether they fit to our company. And for the rest of the team, we do the basic and recruitment process, like job platforms. We do on events, like on beer festivals, we find a lot of marketing people. What I realized is that LinkedIn, in my point of view, is not a very powerful tool in China. I think the local platforms are much better, like 51 jobs and so on. And how do we keep them loyal? I think it's first the management style that we have that applies for me and also for my business partner. I think we are very fair and approachable people. We offer flexible working time, which I think is in China or among our colleagues really something that they value very high. And our team has a very lean structure. So everyone receives a very direct and honest feedback. And on the other hand side, we expect them also to give us a very direct and honest response if it comes to the decision-making process. And I think we have built up a culture where everyone has the feeling that he or she really contributes to the success of the company.
When people come new to your company and you have some onboarding for them, some of them are a little bit surprised about this kind of modern working style. Or how do you feel the workforce that you hire, how are they reacting to it, and how do they deal with it?
I think during the actual interview, it's not, maybe it's not that obvious that our company has such a lean structure. I think after a couple of weeks, they realize that we really have a very open culture in terms of giving feedback and receiving feedback. I know some colleagues that really had difficulties at the beginning with it, because I would just guess that in Chinese culture, it's not very common to give an honest and direct feedback, especially not to your boss. But after a while, I think the people get used to it, and they also value that very highly, that there is someone you can really talk to, and you don't have to worry about your job just because you probably criticize certain decisions and so on. But yeah, in general, I would say those people first, they react a little bit surprised that it is that lean and that open. But on the other hand side, I also think that due to the fact that we manage our team like that, that the people build up a totally different responsibility and accountability for their own job.
So do I understand correctly, you would even recommend that Flexpads also try their own leadership style, not necessarily go after the traditional Chinese management style or what usually the culture books would tell us?
I think it also depends on the team size. We have a team of 20 people. 12 of them are more or less outside Shanghai because it's a sales team. And the 8 to 9 people that we really have in the office, they're easy, in my point of view, easier to manage with a lean structure and with a more open feedback culture, because everyone is also somehow part of a very small department. So if you look to, for example, in our marketing, that are 2 people. So I think it doesn't make sense to build up a huge hierarchy to manage them. It doesn't make sense in my point of view. I don't know how this is going to be in the next 5 to 6 years when we really grow the company and have more and more employees. But I would still be in favor if we at least keep this feedback culture alive, because it really helps us to solve problems easier and also overcome challenges much quicker.
Fully agree to that, especially to the point of trust to each other, openness, and also the feedback culture. As for example, I was growing with my company, so we were really growing in the last years like crazy. But these are the things that we always kept. And the only probably things that came on top of it, you have the one or more management level, and you have built up more smaller teams. So you have more teams in total, but also smaller teams that usually works then quite well. Looking again a little bit more outside, you also mentioned it during your intro, you wanted to really break up this thinking in China about those traditional German beer brands or the beer culture overall. So how do you distinguish yourself from your competitors? And how, from day number one, did you get the knowledge about this beer market in China?
I would start with the knowledge first, the knowledge we really gained by market visits. So no matter in which city we have a colleague or in which city we think this could be the next strategically clever decision to go to, we do market visits. We talk to people in supermarkets, especially those people that work there, to really know what kind of products do work. We go in bars and restaurants, talk to the bartenders, and what kind of products and taste preferences do people have. So we really do basic market visits to learn about the taste preferences and also the brands that are popular in the respective markets. And how do we distinguish ourselves? We have, I would say, 3 main categories of competitors. This is for sure imported beers. They're our stronghold is that we are fresher than them because we don't have to import our products. So we really highlight the freshness of our products and also the localization of our marketing and promotions. I see a lot of international big brands that still don't localize their marketing in China. And I think this is one reason why they're not or why they won't be successful in the long run. Then we have a competition of local premium beers. This is quite difficult to compete with them because usually those local premium beers, those big brands, they have deep pockets for marketing. So we try to avoid a little bit the competition. And that was also the main reason why we started to introduce our beer mix beverages, like comparable to a German Radler, because this is a product which works very well with Chinese consumers. It has lower alcohol, it is a bit sweeter. You can target female clients very well with it. And this is something the big local premium brands don't do. So we created somehow a new product category to really find a stronger selling proposition in China.
We already looked into some of the existing challenges, and since COVID-19 and especially since the Shanghai lockdown, have you experienced any additional challenges?
The lockdown itself was, I would say, the biggest challenge ever, since we started our business in China, because first our warehouse was in Shanghai, so it was blocked. A lot of our suppliers were in Shanghai, so we were not even able to do a new production to overcome somehow the block of our warehouse and deliver products to people outside or to our clients outside Shanghai. So this was a huge challenge, especially in April and May. And now in the aftermath of the lockdown in Shanghai and also the ongoing lockdowns all over the country, they have a huge impact on the consumer environment. Like the consumer behavior is really at a very low level these days, these months actually. So what we are trying to do is now to look more again into the e-commerce channel, but not in the regular e-commerce channels like Tmall and Jingdong. We try to do those group purchases because there are still a lot of people that start to use those group buying activities during the lockdown, so that their compounds receive bigger amounts of beer, for example, in our case. And we were able, like with one delivery, to fulfill the need of a lot of people that wanted to drink beer. So this is something where we try to really overcome this difficult time. However, this will be not enough. Like we also need to develop new channels like supermarkets and convenience stores in the next month, because the bars and restaurants business is really going down. And this is for us the biggest challenge during COVID-19 and the lockdowns in certain areas. It's not only the lockdown in Shanghai that really cost us a lot of revenue.
Yeah, I think even every Flexpad in China now knows how to do group buy or how to join kind of group buy. So I already hear a little bit how you have changed your company strategy. Have you also changed your thinking about China or any other things that you now know you want to drive your company into a different direction?
In terms of the company and the team, I would say that we still stick to our rule that we want to keep not only the structure of the team very lean, but also the workforce itself. Like we don't want to hire too many people because you never know what's going to happen in the coming month, especially in autumn and winter. Then we really had to refocus our distribution channels. We have to develop more clients that are either active in the supermarket and convenience store business. And yeah, you cannot do much about the lockdowns and the local restrictions. This is something you cannot influence yourself. So it's a tough time, not only for us, I think for a lot of F&B companies, and you just have to cope with it. Like it doesn't make sense for us now to say, okay, the market is bad, the environment is bad, and we stop trying to grow our company. Like we just need to find new ways. And this is probably one of the things that you just have to accept if you want to do business in China, that some things you can just not influence.
And me talking as a consumer, actually, I'm very happy that so many restaurants and bars and shops, they are fighting even after the lockdown to keep themselves alive, because otherwise, and that keeps me motivated, because otherwise, if the streets of Shanghai would be empty, there's not so much else you want to be here for, right? Another question. So Brother Urstoff, you also mentioned it in the beginning, is a German brand. But would you rather consider it as a German or as a Chinese company? Because you also talked a lot about localization.
Nowadays, I would say it's a Chinese company with German heritage. I think you could compare it to Qingdao. Qingdao also has a German heritage. It's one of the biggest beer companies in China and in the world. So we are also, if you talk to our colleagues, we are a Chinese company nowadays.
And your company values, how would they say, are they more German-oriented or more Chinese-oriented?
I would say, like, we wrote them down a couple of months ago, like, what are really our values, what does drive our company, and we have some taglines, like, for example, that we always say, sales comes always first. This is something, I would say, this is also very Chinese, that you really try to follow your client, to follow your revenue. So sales comes always first is one. Then probably a more German approach is long-term success instead of short-term results. Like we really try to build the company with, like, over the next years, decades, instead of just having a quick, nice result for the brand and for our profits. Like we really take it serious and we want to stay in China. And then this is something probably for a lot of Chinese companies not very common, is that we really value fairness, respect, and transparency. And not only within our company, we also expect that our suppliers, they have the same values. Like when we do business with them, we expect them that they work fairly and respectful with us.
I think it very well describes how you bring together two cultures into one company, into one brand. Perfectly, perfectly described. if you now look back on your own life and career in China, what are you really thankful for?
I would say really thankful for that I really were able to learn more about myself, like that I'm able to adapt myself to a new environment, especially to such a new culture and the language that you really have to learn from scratch. It's not like that you can pick some words from other languages. You really start from zero. This was something I think at the beginning I didn't really expect from myself, that I have this patience to do so and also the drive to always keep it up. And for sure, meeting many people. But meeting many people also has some disadvantages in China. It's like, especially as a flexpat, if you have a lot of foreign friends, those friends, they leave usually after 3 years. They work for bigger companies as long as they're not entrepreneurs. Like entrepreneurs, maybe they stay also longer. But most of the flexpats and expats in the Chinese community or friends that I had, they leave after 3 years. So after 3 years, you always need to find new friends. This is a little bit a disadvantage. Nevertheless, like I really enjoy the time in China, meeting new people. And I also enjoy the way how in China people are doing business. Like it's very fast, it's very direct. Networking is super easy in China. And this is something that I really learned about this culture, that the people, if you really approach them in a correct way and show interest in their culture and in their language, they're really open. And they give you a lot of feedback and they also try to make friends with you.
Yeah, especially the experience with the friends I've also made. I'm here now for 12 years and every few years you start from scratch. The other good thing is if you get to know more people at the end, you have a huge ground of friends and acquaintances across the world. So this is also what I appreciate. And the other thing is you get very well in networking. So it doesn't take long time to make new friends. And on the other hand, I think getting to know more people always broadens your horizon at the end of the day. And I mean, we never know what's happening in the future, but just right. Looking at yourself, do you plan to stay in China for good?
Well, we have the clear goal first to really make Brenda Urstorf successful in China. And I think as a co-founder and general manager, this is my task also to do that and to be part of it. And on the other hand side, I have to say, if someone would have told me 10 years ago that I'm going to end up in China, I would not have believed it. So it's really difficult to say where I'm going to be in the next years. But for now, I want to be here. I want to be part of our team. We want to create like more value for our brand and more value for the company. And I think then the future is nevertheless very difficult to predict.
And especially you end up in China with your own beer brand on your own efforts and went through all those challenges. That's really a very exciting story. And you have gone through all those challenges and learned a lot out of it and especially also created some new skills. So which skills, in your opinion, do you think are most important for a flexpat to be successful in China?
I would say being able to adapt to a new environment and also be willing to do so. Then eager to learn about the culture and the behavior of consumers. This is a lesson that we really had to learn, that the consumer behavior is super important, especially for FMCG brands. And in general, being very flexible to cope with Chinese speed, because everything is so fast here. I would say these are the three most important recommendations or skills that I would have for someone who wants to do business in China.
And if I now should recommend our episode today to some special listeners, who should listen to this episode and why?
I would say in general, all flexpats, and especially those that are entrepreneurs and who want to start their own company in China. I would say since I have a very strong food and beverage focus, for sure it's interesting for people that are interested to do something similar to listen to this podcast and to learn more about like what kind of challenges we had to overcome and how to set up a company in the food and beverage industry in China.
And last question for today, what is the key message you'd like to share with our audience?
Adopt yourself, adopt your product, adopt your service to the Chinese market and build your business on a long-term strategy. Don't try to make fast money in China. I assume it's just not possible for most of us to just come in here and expect like fast money. This is think it's an illusion.
And it does not only account for your company and for your business. I think it also accounts for your career. If you only try to make the quick money, to make a quick next step, this is never really successful. And also, to be honest, it only stresses you out. Let me quickly summarize a few key points. What I really liked about our talk, you highlighted the term of localization. I mean, this challenge of coming as a German brand into China and your whole journey through the localization, local agent, also local employeeship, local platforms to hire, and then even adjusting to the local taste. Then also what I hear, management style is something important, of course, fits also together with this adaptiveness, what you said, maybe even make a fusion of Chinese and European values. And of course, the willingness to learn, the willingness also to learn about the culture, about the language overall. And I mean, yeah, flexibility and speed. Everyone, I think, has an experience with that. This is super important. Otherwise, probably China is not the right country to go as a flexpat. Felix, I really enjoyed our talk. Thanks a lot for your time, and I hope I see you soon.
Thanks for the invitation. It was nice to talk to you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode. Please recommend it to your friends and colleagues, anyone who wants to come to China or simply learn more about life and career here. Francis, myself, and every Flexpat of our community is here to support each other, so don't feel shy and reach out to us. Thanks, and see you soon.